Well, I'm back. Didn't go very far. Bill and Dan on their way for the Monday edition of The Drive. There's Drew. All right. Well, we have one of four, maybe. I don't know who all is supposed to be here. So I'm here for the moment being. Jacob Goins with you from On the Line, 2 to 4 here on ESPN 106.7. So just rolling right into another couple of minutes of the show. Dan informed me they were pulling in shortly. Oh, goodness. They're wow. All right. They're pulling in hot. They say, what's the saying? Is a rolling in on two wheels. That was about a wheel and a half right there. But they are pulling in Monday edition of The Drive here on ESPN 106.7. The guys will be here momentarily. They'll be talking about the Iron Bowl, Auburn, Alabama. Be talking all the biggest news in college football. Maybe dip into a little basketball conversation as well as Auburn gets ready to take on Duke on Wednesday after winning the Maui Invitational over the short Thanksgiving break. And so lots to get to, lots to talk about. College football was crazy. We just talked about it for 2 hours during On the Line about how just spicy, I guess you could say, and how just emotional college football was all weekend long. And the Iron Bowl showed it as well. There they are. Wow. They made it. Y'all rode together. How about that? Y'all rode together in the same car. Right.
Yeah, well, the problem was Dan was stuck getting his car serviced as I was leaving, so I had to go by and pick him up, and then trying to come all the way across town.
Wow.
Yeah. Drew has no excuse.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
Drew
I have nothing
no
for
excuse.
Him.
I have another job. So.
Well, that's true. Yeah, so here we are. Yeah, sorry about that. I thought we're almost going to make it, and I was right. We almost made it on time.
Thanks, Jacob.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It is The Drive. Brian Matthews is supposed to be. I thought maybe Brian would just bring us in, but Brian's not here yet either. Maybe I needed to remind him when I saw him over at basketball a little while ago. Welcome in, everybody. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Drive off to the kind of start that Auburn football suffered through many, many times.
No,
this year.
I don't think that's fair. That's a burial of Jacob almost, right? I mean,
no. I'm saying us not being here was like sort of like
no. That. Auburn was there. It's like I mean,
they
I know
were
it's
there,
in,
but
just missed opportunities, Bill. I mean, all season long, and I think it was going to take the Iron Bowl was going to take a particularly special performance by Auburn to win in Tuscaloosa.
Well, they had nothing like that. There was
right.
Nothing special about it. I mean, you really, I don't know. I mean, it was a befuddling, bewildering sort of game plan. I know Hugh Freeze said he thought it was a good plan. I am still trying to wrap my head around that. I mean,
I think he's been trying against good teams for 2 years, and I don't think, look, the problems that cost Auburn a chance to stay really close into the fourth quarter of the Iron Bowl, I don't think those are the same problems that cost Auburn against Cal.
No, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it's different.
It wasn't turnovers. Now, there were some, again, I don't know that I've seen an offensive line just continually in the red zone have more false starts. Auburn is a disaster in the red zone, has been for years. But this year, it seems like whatever Auburn can do to hurt themselves in the red zone, they will. And they were in the red zone. I think they only credited, I guess one time Auburn only made it to the 21. But, I mean, Auburn was inside Alabama's 25 four times in the first half with 3 points. Total points.
I mean, I would suppose, especially if you're looking at personnel, like I would imagine that Auburn has had to sort of scheme around a lack of faith in the outside of the offensive line. You know, for most of Hugh Freeze's 2 years, you know, when Auburn tries to pass, they don't know what kind of protection they're going to get at tackle.
I think Alabama may have shown them a couple of things they can do. You can throw some quick passes to your tight ends or to your backs. You can use screens a little bit.
Yeah, I think Auburn sort of landed on keeping guys into protect.
Right.
Right. And because people have wondered
Max
about
protect.
Yeah, like a lack of checkdowns and a lack of things like that. I think Auburn is using a lot of those checkdown options as guys, you know, staying in to help take the pressure off of the offensive line and keep the pressure off of Peyton Thorne. You know, here's a problem though, Bill. I don't know if that problem I don't know if that issue solves, you know, has a clear solution when Auburn goes into this offseason with such a question mark at tackle after this season, right? I mean, with Too Tall graduating, we think Dylan Wade is sticking around. We'll see, but maybe he plays tackle. I don't know if Auburn views Dylan Wade as an answer necessarily at tackle, but I don't know if Auburn views anyone on the roster right now as one of the answers at tackle. Is Tyler Johnson still in the picture and competing? Like, I don't know, but Auburn has, you have a lot of work to do, and that's such, you know, relying on the portal to fix your problems at left tackle just feels like a huge gamble every year.
Well, they're
I know it's worked
likely,
for some teams.
Likely to have to be relying on it again next year.
Right. And
I don't know if the answer, I mean, maybe Tyler Johnson will be ready.
I just think that's a position. But isn't
will
that
Dylan
a position?
Wade be back?
Wouldn't Brian and wouldn't Jason tell us, like, that's a position where you need to be winning out of high school on signing day for the best players? Like, not necessarily. I mean, you can try to find the best offensive tackle you can in the transfer portal in December. And maybe there are, you know, group of five or high major offensive tackles that want to make the jump to Auburn that can come in and play left tackle at a high level in the SEC. I don't know how many go in the portal every year.
No, and the few that do are, you know, sought by everyone.
Yeah, remember when they used to open the stores on midnight on Black Friday, Bill?
Yep.
That's what it is when there's a big-time quarterback or a big-time offensive tackle in the portal. That's the kind of demand there is for their services. And yeah, it's something Auburn's going to have to keep. I mean, Hugh Freeze, I think, is hoping that he can have some of these answers joining the team out of high school. You know, that's something that Wednesday, I think, is part of that. But, you know, that's not necessarily going to help him next year. You know, next year it's probably going to be go find a veteran. And I just wonder, you know, what kind of results you expect with a left tackle that you got out of the portal as a veteran.
Well, that's something that is a concern. I mean, right now, Auburn season is done. They will not be bowling. 5-7, so a step back from last year, even though, I mean, Auburn appeared to be better, and some numbers would tell you they're better. The results were not better. They were, you know, a half game worse than a year ago. And their season is done. Now we're already seeing some players announcing that they're entering the portal. Holden Gurner was the first. Micah Riley Ducker. There were a couple of reports that Hank Brown was going to enter the portal, but Hank on social media said he has not. Now that's not to say that there is no chance that Hank Brown will be entering the portal. He still may, but he has not. But today, E.J. Harris entering the portal as well.
Well, looking at the Bill Cameron depth chart for next year, like removing, I don't know if you've officially removed all the players.
Not yet.
Who are out of eligibility from the Bill Cameron depth chart yet. But looking at the defense, let's start there. Like if Auburn hangs on to, first of all, I mean, I'm curious as to, I mean, I guess everybody has a decision to make in this era with the portal open to every player. But you also have players who might consider the NFL draft, I suppose. But I think a lot of Auburn's impact players on defense are first and second year guys, rising sophomores, rising juniors. I wonder what strikes you as a priority for Auburn in the transfer portal on defense. Where do you think Auburn is going to look to add veteran talent? And what are sort of the urgent spots where you think they should?
Well, quarterback.
Well, defensively. Because I feel like Auburn's in a pretty good spot, it feels like. I mean, they've recruited well. They've got
probably up front, I would think. I mean,
although mixed results going upperclassmen up front this past year, right? I wonder if they're going to try to.
But there are some. I mean, there are some out there. What Auburn needs to do now, and I think this will be the approach that Hugh Freeze will have. Last year, I think they were looking for quantity. I think this year you look quality. You don't need three or four upper-class defensive linemen to give you depth. You need that guy that can step in and is proven that he's going to take on two, that he's going to demand two blockers to free up somebody else, or he is someone who is a disruptor and can penetrate and be in the backfield. You need proven guys like that, a proven player like that. If you can get one, I think, like that on the inside, I think that would be a huge step, because that was one area Auburn could put no pressure on a quarterback with a four-man rush, just none all year long. And that's something, it makes it put so much more pressure on the rest of your defense. They either have to cover longer, or you're taking somebody from coverage to try to bring them as a blitzer to try to put pressure on the quarterback.
Right, and Auburn's losing a lot of snaps on the defensive line. They're losing a lot of snaps at linebacker. Some of that they've recruited, and you know, they've recruited well enough to stick with players they have internally, and you know, move some guys up. I think on the interior defensive line, you would think that Malik Blockton and Bobby Jamison Travis are probably in position to have big roles next year. Who else? I mean, I guess T.J. Lindsey would be a quite. You know, you'd wonder if he can. You know,
I guess we haven't seen him.
I know. I mean, are Jamison Travis and Blockton the only two? Rakes? Does Rakes have eligibility?
No, he's done.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's a position where they're probably going to have to find a lot of snaps.
I think Zeke Walker could be back, but he's been more a strong side end. Line, than he has an interior guy.
Linebacker, you're replacing Asante and Mousy and Keys.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that can be an increase of snaps for Riddick, although he's already playing a lot. But I think
didn't play as much Saturday.
But I think you're probably going to need to find some other linebacker options as well.
Yeah, probably an experienced linebacker, maybe a safety. You don't need as much help on the defensive side of the ball as you do on offense, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we're a week away from the transfer portal. We're 2 days away from the signing period. And Auburn has, let's see, I guess it was before the ball game Saturday, wasn't it, when Tavarius Dice announced he was flipping to Florida. Auburn's got a couple of other players that are going to be very interesting to watch. Nate Marshall, defensive lineman, visited Texas. I think Auburn still feels pretty good about him. Donovan Starr, though, was in Tuscaloosa, and Alabama is really pushing for the defensive back from Tennessee. Auburn had to try to shore things up with him. It looked like he was wavering about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Auburn really wants him, as they're really trying to continue to add more young defensive backs. They'd love to flip Naeem Offord from Ohio State. He was up there to watch Michigan beat the Buckeyes last Saturday.
Would it be an overreaction to part ways with Ryan Day over something like that? I mean, they're so good.
See the number?
So good in Big Ten play.
He's 47-1 against everybody but Michigan. 47-1.
I don't know.
Everybody but Michigan, and he's 1-4 against Michigan.
I think he's a good coach. I think he's clearly, you know, had a – But I have no idea. Like, his name's been mentioned at other places. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how Ryan Day would do if he inherited a mess.
Yeah, I don't.
And
either.
Had to suddenly build it into a winner at a place that isn't Ohio State. Like at a place that's
at
been
a place where he didn't have the kind of talent that he has.
Yeah, and at a place that's been winning. That was winning 10 games a year with Urban Meyer before he got there. It's I think a little bit easier. We've seen coaches sustain those kind of programs, but not really succeed at building their own. I don't know. I can understand why this loss in particular is especially frustrating. And they might still make the college football playoff. I think both of these, like the 10-2 teams that didn't make their conference title games, Ohio State, Miami, I guess would also be like in that category.
Yeah,
like
Miami had a 21-0 lead.
Do you? I mean,
there were some crazy things, and you know.
Can a 9-3 SEC team make the college football playoff over 10-2 Miami?
If their name is Alabama, I say yes. I think part of this is because I'm old and I've been around this a long time, and it seems like it always goes this way. But yes, I think a 9-3 Alabama will probably get in over a two loss
Miami,
other power
specific,
four teams.
Miami would be the specific example because Ohio State, I think Ohio State's still getting in.
I think Ohio State's still getting in.
I think Ohio State at 10-2 is still getting in.
Yes.
Even though they're not in the Big Ten championship game, right? Penn State's playing Oregon. So Ohio State, I mean, their season's finished. Regular season is finished. Miami, I'm curious to see what the pollsters do with Miami. And I guess the other question would be, what do they do with if SMU loses, right? Like, I mean, you would have
SMU, and what are they, number 7?
Yeah.
SMU is number 7. I can almost guarantee you SMU will drop below Alabama.
Right, although Clemson would move in that situation. You'd have to make room for Clemson.
Yeah, but I think there'd be one ACC team. There'd be one.
Do you think Alabama's going to be ahead of 10-2 Miami in tomorrow's poll?
I would not be surprised because
neither of them are playing this weekend.
Right.
So like the question is going to be like did 10-2 Miami drop far enough? Like did they drop with a loss like that out of the I don't know the answer to that. What did the human polls do with them? I actually haven't looked. Let me check.
I honestly didn't pay that much attention either.
All right, in the AP poll, Miami dropped to 14. They were 8 last week.
Mm-hmm. So Alabama, they're behind Alabama.
Alabama moved up to 11.
Right. I knew Alabama was 11.
Yeah, Alabama and Clemson with the loss dropped 6 spots as well, although Clemson can still make the college football playoff.
With a win over SMU.
With a win over SMU. But I think the
yeah, so see Alabama, I think Alabama is in over Miami.
We mentioned a list of games specifically where Alabama probably needed an upset to be in position to be the 9-3 SEC team in the college football playoff. And I think that Syracuse is you know, maybe
that was
Alabama.
One of them. Yeah. I mean, they got some of what they needed on Saturday. They did.
We mentioned Vandy would have been another one of those games. You know, Vandy had beaten Tennessee. It would have opened the door potentially for a 9-3 Tennessee team to get jumped by one of those other SEC programs. South Carolina beat Clemson and moves up 3 spots, but I think the committee is holding. Interesting, the committee can rank South Carolina ahead of Ole Miss, who beat them.
Who beat them soundly.
But not Alabama.
But Alabama, who barely beat them.
And, you know, and I don't think there's a, to be clear.
Wasn't the Ole Miss win in Columbia?
Did Ole Miss go to Columbia and do that? I thought that game was in Oxford.
Oh, okay.
But either way, I don't think there's a correct answer to the Alabama versus Ole Miss versus South Carolina thing. Like, I understand prioritizing head-to-head. I understand prioritizing the way South Carolina has played down the stretch. I understand if you think Alabama is the best team of the three.
Why would you think that? Because if they didn't have that A
exactly,
on there,
yeah.
I mean, what? Now, they beat Georgia.
They did beat Georgia.
They beat
as
Georgia.
Did Ole Miss.
That's true.
They both have wins
man,
over.
Man, how wild was the Georgia-Georgia Tech game?
Wow.
Are you
a game we never even talked about as a potential?
No,
like, I mean,
no, and Georgia Tech had them. They had them 2 touchdown lead with 5.5 minutes to go. Got to change the overtime rules.
You hate it.
I hated it.
If I gave you czar power, if I made you college football czar and said, Bill Cameron, how do we decide games in overtime? What would you say?
I don't know exactly how, but I want something other than 2-point conversions.
My proposal is, and I'm a bit of a radical on this one, Bill, but get ready. My proposal is, I think it's similar to the current college football overtime of the first 2 periods, but I think it's first and goal at the 10, and maybe no field goals. Maybe it's first and goal at the 10. You have 4 plays to score a touchdown. You can do extra points if you want. But I would say just it's back and forth. Can you stop it? You kind of soccer shootout style, but it's with a first and goal at the 10 instead of a first and 10 at the 25. I don't necessarily want people kicking field goals at the end of it. It's four plays to score a touchdown.
I would rather have it just be more of like a regular type game, but I would then change after after 2 overtimes. Both teams don't have to go for 2, but if a team kicks, then the team who is defended scores has to go for 2. You're going to end it. It's going to end.
I don't like that.
Why?
Because I think that puts way too much on like winning the coin toss to be the team that goes first.
Well, that's you're winning the coin toss so you can have the advantage in the third third overtime period. When it's, like, when, if, when if anything, before you get there,
I just don't like this. I don't like a different set of rules for the second set. If anything, if like I think there shouldn't be. I thought they had the right system at first. I thought the first and goal, first and at the 25.
First and goal and from the 25.
I don't think you ever should have been able to kick extra points. I think it always should have been go for.
I think you should because
I think that's how you can win it. You have to score and you have to go for two. And if the other team doesn't get it, now you can go for two and win. But I think there shouldn't have been extra points at any point in it. And I didn't like the. They changed that to the third one, right? Like the third overtime you had to go. Mm-hmm. I think you should have had to go for two the whole time. Like if it's about wrapping it up. But I'm with you. I don't like the 2-point conversions back and forth. I don't like that. I think that there's another way.
Well, the other thing that's ridiculous is none of the stats count. But everything else counted.
And I really
everything else counted whether you're 25 or the 10 or wherever.
Urgently. Like, that cannot be the way they decide college football playoff games.
No.
I know it will be this year because those are the rules.
Oh, sure.
But much the same way hockey doesn't do shootouts in the postseason. They just play a sudden death quarter. They abandon the I understand the need for a win in the regular season and you want to wrap it up quickly. But the college football playoff should have.
Why not just have ties in the regular season? Who cares?
I wouldn't. I mean, I know, but if they, but
now,
if
I mean, we had, there were ties for the first 100 years or so of college football. There were ties.
I mean, and I don't.
And a tie counts as a half win and a half loss, and then you go by percentage.
I don't hate the NFL.
Postseason's different. Postseason, yes, you need a winner to be able to advance. But if they want to, oh, for the safety of the players and for whatever, have ties.
Just be no overtime regular season.
No overtime in a regular season. Then you don't have to worry about, these players playing more plays because of the game being tied.
Interesting. That's an old school opinion.
I mean, do it. I mean, like hockey. I mean, it's like, who cares if there's a tie in the regular season?
Yeah. Although
you're getting some points, though.
They've gotten rid of ties in the regular season for shootouts, but I know what you mean. And I don't, that's an interesting idea, to just say, you played 60 minutes. It's a regular season game. Game ends in a draw. I mean, it's.
I mean, whatever. I mean, there's so many things for us to be talking about today, and we're way
behind. But I'm with you. I don't like the 2-point conversion.
I do not. And that's why it's like 8 overtimes. Well, it's like 8 plays. I mean, it's just one play per team. It's like, well, you screw up that one play, and you lose.
While we're changing rules and getting rid of things, I know we're way behind, but we'll fix it. Matt, we'll go to break. We'll talk about this another time.
All right, we will. Brian Matthews will be joining us as well, and we'd love for you to. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
At University Ace Hardware.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 27 minutes after 4 o'clock. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews on his way. He will be joining us as well. But let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Pat gets us started. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys, I like y'all's ideas, but I think I'm going to combine what y'all are saying. Okay.
Fine.
So let's start at the 40 on the first drive. Okay, you can kick the field goal. You can go for one at the end of the thing. Second drive, you start at the 30. Third drive, but you got to go for two, just like they do now. Third drive, you start at the 40, 30, 20. And
it's like a duel. And you do 40 paces and then you have 30 paces.
Yeah. But then like you said, just after that, just go from the 10 on there on out and never get closer than the 10. And, I mean, you're definitely going to break the tie. I mean, because there's going to be somebody that's not going to get a first down. They're going to kick a 54-yard field goal.
The pushback, Pat, I like the idea. The pushback to 40 yards is that this whole thing is about trying to shorten the time that overtime takes.
Mm-hmm, right.
I think, and that's sort of why they went from, having
that's
it on the 25 every single time.
That's why they went with the 2-point
conversion. Which is sort of why I think the 10-yard thing is almost a compromise between the 25 and what they're doing now with the 2-point conversion. But maybe you try one from the first distance, right? Maybe the first one's at the 25, and then every overtime from that point's at the 10, or something like that.
Saying, the reason why the 40 is important is because if you don't get a first down, you'll probably miss a 54-yard field goal.
Yeah, you want them to start outside of field goal range. No, I totally get that.
On the first one. So if you don't get a first down, then you're probably going to miss your field goal. And then the next team, if they get a first down, then they're going to make their field goal and it'll be over.
Pat, I think there's something to that, and I hope that there's I really hope one of these college football playoff games has like a crazy amount of 2-point conversion overtimes and there's outrage afterward about, like, you know, about the idea of a championship being decided that way. Although at the same time, Pat, I got to be honest. I don't want to we got sidetracked on it, Bill. We can only talk so much football today. When Auburn men's basketball
number two, did I say they'd be number two?
I thought they should. I thought they were going to jump in the AP poll.
I thought they the AP probably poll, should have, but I figured they would be number two.
They're the hottest team in the country. They're maybe the best team in the country, Pat. And Jani Broom has as good a shot of winning a National Player of the Year award as any Auburn player ever has of winning one of those awards.
Yeah, well, I definitely won some money in Vegas on those two games. I didn't want to bet on the last game. I should have, but I just didn't want to have to come back to get my money in six months, you know, whatever. But
if they beat Duke, Pat, it's 5 quad one wins in an 8-0 start. And it's one of the
remember
great
how desperate Auburn was trying to find him last
Auburn
year.
Auburn didn't get a quad one win until February last year when they beat Alabama at home. It was Auburn's first quad one victory. Auburn would have 5 in the first 8 games if they beat Duke tomorrow. I imagine, I haven't done the homework on this. Someone, you know, who can do more digging than me there, but like I think that would be one of the great starts and one of the great 8-0 starts by anyone ever to a college basketball season. If Auburn and it already is, but if Auburn could cap it off with a win at Duke,
Well, I kind of like not being number one, quite honestly, because they get a big head whenever we're ranked number one. But you know, I was going to go to Hawaii, but I said just go to Vegas instead. So that was definitely worth the trip. But anyway, all right, guys, well, where are you going? Everything's looking good. Hopefully we hold our class together in football, and I think that we should, if we do, I think we'll be looking good next year. Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Yeah, but that is a necessity for Auburn to hold this class together. Like I said, there are a couple of guys. There's the linebacker. Eldridge is a guy that you got to keep an eye on. Ole Miss still talking about Deuce. We will see. What happens there? Can Auburn flip Naeem Offord? Do they add Darian Smith from Tennessee? But they desperately need to hang on to this class, and it'll be interesting to see as we get through the week. Like I said, the transfer portal doesn't officially open until Monday.
It's worrying,
but
though.
Players whose seasons are done, there's no reason for them not to say that they're going to enter.
Right, and you know Auburn's got 3 separate missions, and they're all of sort of equal importance, right?
Critically important.
You've got the mission to keep as many of these high school players and maybe pull off a flip or two on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You've got the mission to keep the in-house underclassmen,
right,
who have the option to transfer, the ones that you view as part of the solution next year, the ones that you see as like part of the foundation. You got to keep them in-house. I think Auburn made a clear effort, Bill, to make Cam Coleman more of a focal point.
Yeah, that was pretty obvious.
The final few games. I don't know how much of that was. And look, I think there are multiple answers here. I think they might have done that because they thought it helped them win games.
And yeah, it surely didn't hurt their chances.
And I think they also might have done it because they wanted to keep Cam Coleman happy because he has a decision to make this offseason about whether or not he wants to stay at Auburn. So you've got the mission to keep the underclassmen in-house and keep them part of the picture. And then you've also got to go find a left tackle, a quarterback.
You absolutely have to find a quarterback.
I mean, and you have maybe filling in other spots, maybe 2 tackles, maybe a tight end. Maybe you might want to replace Lambert Smith with another veteran receiver to join.
You'd love to, yeah.
Like
you could.
Like I think Auburn's got a decent sized shopping list as far as what they'd like to do in the transfer portal, and that's completely different from what they do with incoming high school players and with the players that are currently on the roster right now. I agree with you. Quarterback is maybe the it's the most urgent addition.
There's not even a maybe about it. It is absolutely critical that Auburn have a quarterback who they are confident can win in the SEC.
And I would say that folks are going to make the link between Keaton Slovis, who
Salter?
Salter, not Slovis. Yeah, Salter.
Salter announced he's going to enter the portal.
Yeah, he's going to go to, we'll see what happens, but he's been linked to.
Yeah, he said he's entering the portal though.
Yes, but he's been linked to Auburn in the past.
Oh yeah,
he took a visit to Auburn during his brief window in the portal a year ago, before going back to Liberty to complete his college football.
Didn't Hugh Freeze recruit him when he went to the portal from Tennessee?
Yes, he's a Hugh Freeze signee initially. So I mean, he was Conference USA player, was Conference USA MVP in 2023. I would think he's somebody that major conference teams are going to be interested in, and you would think that Auburn would be one of those teams.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Brian should be joining us shortly. Love for you to join in as well here on the Monday Drive. We're all here. Hey, it's crazy. It's a crazy Monday. Students are back from Thanksgiving. It's the final week of classes.
Yeah,
traffic is insane again. But we're here. And Brian, yep. I mean, there's an awful lot to talk about. A disappointing end to a disappointing season.
Yeah,
that was. We've seen this time and time again. And once again, Auburn, you know, some of the numbers look pretty good. Red zone is just awful for Auburn.
And, you know, they had opportunities. Was it four turnovers total, three in the first half?
Yes.
And just did not take advantage of them at all, really. And to me, it summed up the whole season in some ways, you know. Mm-hmm. Auburn lost, I'll look back on it for my column, but four games at home against 6-16.
Right, they're the reason that four teams are bowl eligible.
Yeah, three of them Auburn beat in Hugh Freeze's first year.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just.
I mean, the Cal, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt, all teams that Auburn beat on the road in year one.
I'm not sure that Auburn will get an easier schedule they had than this year in the SEC for a long time.
Well, next year they'll have the same schedule next year.
But those,
they get Georgia and Alabama at home.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's comparable next year.
Yeah.
But I mean, they had better take. They've got to take advantage.
Yeah. It's just
they did
there's
not
no more
this year.
There's no. I mean, there's no more talking about what Hugh Freeze inherited.
No.
There's no more talking about the distant past. I think it is a season that hinges entirely on what Hugh Freeze can do on the field over the next 10, 12 months. And that's, I think it's a scary proposition because I don't think talent was the only problem. Like, I don't think talent was the reason.
No.
Like you can, yes. Look, was personnel a huge reason why Auburn lost to Alabama and Georgia?
Sure.
Sure. but a team that's good enough to beat A&M.
It is talented enough to beat anybody else
that they
played on their schedule other than Georgia and Alabama.
Especially
And I thought it was, and I don't know if there was a game Auburn played, you know, among Cal, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Vanderbilt of the five of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it came out of any of them saying, "Oh well, Auburn needs to upgrade."
Wow, they're a whole lot more talented than Auburn.
And especially like singling out a position, right, and saying, "Oh, Auburn needs to get a lot better at this position," and that's why they lost. I mean, maybe you could. I know people are going to blame, but the moment Auburn lands a transfer portal quarterback, there's going to be like nonstop scapegoating of Peyton Thorne, and there's going to be like, "Well, just wait until you see what this new guy did."
Hmm.
I don't think it was. You know, I don't think it was. I want to be careful laying the blame for the frustrating 2024 offense
entirely at the feet of Peyton Thorne? No.
Yeah.
No. Auburn has to get better at the line of scrimmage. Both sides.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they cannot put pressure on a quarterback with a four-man rush, and they cannot protect their quarterback with the five guys on the offensive line.
The offensive tackle position in just to point out, one was really a struggle this year for Auburn. Quarterback obviously was, and the line of scrimmage. I mean, this was a team that tried to pass a lot without very good protection from the tackles, and with the quarterback that did not handle pressure well at all. And instead of building this offense around Jarquez Hunter, I know that's not the offense that you Freeze and his staff want to run, but he was the best player on that side of the ball.
You want to run a certain offense, you want to win games.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn ran the ball how many times Saturday? It will show, I think, it's 23 runs, but three or four of them were scrambles after passes.
Yeah, Hunter had 13
carries.
I think it was two or three in the second half. Three in the second half.
Well, he had 46 yards on his first four carries. Then Alabama started putting more guys in the box, and Auburn stopped. Auburn just stopped trying to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so Peyton Thorne throws the ball 41 times.
Yeah, it's just that's not a winning. That's not how you go on the road and win.
No, it's not.
It's just I feel like when I look ahead to next year, they're obviously going to go hard in the portal for probably two quarterbacks, I would think. They've got to get some offensive tackles, and they probably need to go ahead and try to sign some other offensive linemen that can come in here and compete for starting jobs too. If I'm being completely
I'm wondering
about that group.
Will Dylan Wade and Jeremy Wright come back?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
Connor Lew is back, and I think he's a really good player, and I think is it Kai Ellis, the signee who moved up a year in class? He's going to be a really good player too at center. But other than Connor, I'm just not sure anybody should be penciled in as a starter there on that offensive line. I just don't think they perform well overall throughout the season.
Let me ask you this. Who are players that weren't starters on the offensive line this year that you think could break into the starting offensive line next year? Because I just think we were talking about before you got here, it sounds great to say you're going to go get four new starters on the offensive line in the transfer portal until you look and see how rare it is for teams to do that and then be really good on the offensive line around college football.
They can go get one if you get the right one.
Yeah, I just don't like if the strategy is, you know, we need four new starters who, you know, from other programs via the portal, right. You know, I'm concerned about, you know, how effective that's going to be. And I look at Jeremiah and Dylan as guys with at least 1 year, you know, they both have a year left if they want to pursue it. And I wonder if Auburn would look at the possibility of having those three. You know, Dylan might be playing tackle. I mean, you're looking right now, and I mean, Dylan's one of your two tackles.
They just can't do that again
at the moment. Yeah. But I mean, you know, but I wonder if
DeAndre Carter is the one young guy on the team that I think has a chance to push.
And he's a guard.
Yeah, he is a guard. It's really the tackle positions that need to be addressed. And I just think when I look at that entire group of offensive linemen, it's not as good at the top it needs to be right now. Right?
I mentioned Tyler earlier. Tyler Johnson is like, you know, maybe as a young guy, he played a little bit this year, but I don't know if Auburn views him as a contender to be a starter.
And I just don't see a lot of those guys down the depth chart, the young guys that I see as definitive SEC starters in the future. I think DeAndre Carter probably is. I know we haven't really seen him, you know, a whole lot, but I think he has that potential. But I don't know who else is.
Braden, maybe. I mean, he played a little bit this year, and as a young guy,
started the last few games.
Started the last couple games. I wonder if, you know,
it's a great story what he's overcome and how much hard work he can come in. I do think he's built more as a center, which, you know, is tough. You can't have, you know, so they'll have to figure it out. But I just think that whole situation there, they inherited a terrible situation offensive line. They made it better, but they needed to make it a lot better.
Let's get back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Rob is up next. Hey, Rob.
Hey, watching Auburn's offensive line for years, there's a term I can't say on the radio what they look like, but it's been horrible. And I go back to, and Bill, I think you pointed this out to me, when Braden Smith, hell of an offensive lineman for Auburn, 14 through 17, I think his rookie year with the Colts, wasn't he quoted in the Indianapolis Star how much, you know, he loved Auburn and all that, you know, obligatory stuff. But he said the offense that he ran as a lineman in college, it just really didn't prepare him for life in the NFL because he was such a great competitor and great gifted athlete. He caught on pretty quickly. But every coach out there since then, I believe, no doubt, has used that against Auburn in recruiting. Couple that with the fact that 7-on-7 camps are the order of the day, and everybody's running around in compression T-shirts and looking good and those kind of drills. And over on the side, being totally ignored, is offensive linemen. I mean, I think Jason said on here, on my show, that there might be 20 or 25 really good offensive linemen out there every year. And y'all mentioned about getting four starters from the portal. I mean, why don't you go recruit hockey players and Lake Okeechobee too while you're at it? It ain't going to happen. It's a mess, and I'm with you. It's like that offense that Auburn. I think Hugh Freeze is a lot like Gus Malzahn. They did it their way for a long time. They listened to Frank Sinatra too much, but they're obsolete now. Their schemes are outdated, and it's time they either improvise, adapt, and overcome whatever there is, or they're going to go the way of the dodo bird, the dinosaurs, and ivory-billed woodpecker.
You know, I wonder if that's really the case, though, Rob. I mean, Auburn moved the ball well until they got to the red zone. It wasn't that, oh, boy, the defense has had them figured out and they stuffed them. And Auburn also appeared to be a team that if they ran the ball more, they could have been more successful. They just didn't. So I don't know that it's outdated schemes. Somebody, I don't remember who it was, I read comments from someone, and I thought, you know, this makes sense. This team looks like, when you see them, you think they're talented enough to be winning these ball games, and you wonder if it's Hugh Freeze is, you know, he's all about scheming up plays, coming up with things, getting players open, and then the players executing it. What have we heard over and over and over and over again is the players aren't executing it.
The game plan.
That's not necessarily the game plan.
The game plan is always perfect.
That's what we always hear. I wonder if his assistants are good enough teachers at the execution of what he needs to get done, or if they're more recruiters and they're more into the scheming thing, because execution has been where Auburn does not. I mean, they have failed
over two years. You're saying this is sort of the risk of prioritizing recruiting over developing at the coaching level.
That's what somebody said.
It's a theory.
It does
look
like that when you watch Bill, some of this.
Yeah. Bill, can I throw something in?
Yeah.
I talked to a longtime SEC coach this morning off air, and he made a good point. He said, look, everybody says this is the coaches' league. He said, no, it's a players' league. He said, you can have all the schemes you want, but if you don't have the players to run them, it doesn't matter.
But the thing is, those players need to know what to do on every play, too. You can't just put 22 five-stars out there and say, okay, guys, go get it. Somebody still has to instruct them on what they need to be doing, you know, in certain situations, in every situation.
I agree. And Gus Malzahn's career of playing musical chairs at one school after another is about to come to an end.
It's hilarious, isn't it?
Go over there.
I mean, that is crazy.
He's going to guess people's weight at the fair in Tallahassee.
Well, I mean, he did it to avoid being fired, but that's the reason he did that.
Yeah, well, but Auburn, I think, is a great buy going forward, but they got to get a quarterback. But then here's my question to all of y'all. Y'all know it. The portal, October 15th, 2018. So we're 6 years' worth of data on here. I'd love to see the stats, the numbers, on the number of guys that go to the portal from Power 4, Power 5 to another Power 5 school, how they do versus the guys that go from Group of 5 up to Power 5 or now Power 4, because everybody's going in the portal, and then we got recruiting, and I'm just curious, do y'all see Auburn holding on to this class in the next 48 hours? We keep hearing about Jared Smith and Deuce Knight and I'm sure, but Auburn's trying
we're right up against it, man. Good stuff. We really appreciate it.
We'll get Brian to address that when we come back. We are behind. So, yeah, hang on. We'll be right back to wrap things up for hour number one of the Monday Drive.
Your dream event starts at Acre. From corporate events, holiday parties, rehearsal dinners, and weddings.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Final minute or so of hour number one. All right, Rob was wondering about Auburn hanging on to its signing class.
Yeah, and, you know, so far, so good. I mean, recruiting
Tavares Dice was a big loss, literally.
Yeah, a big fella, big offensive lineman. But I expected some drama here.
Sure.
Right? I don't expect Auburn to go in. I think they had 27 at the time and to sign all 27 or 26, whatever it was. I do think, and I will say that things can change, right? This is teams get desperate this time of year. And sometimes they'll throw a lot of extra money at a player just because they really, really need him. But right now, I think that Auburn's in good shape to retain Deuce Knight, good shape to retain Jared Smith, and then maybe in – I don't know about Donovan Starr. I think that's the one the most worried about right now in Alabama. And then maybe in position to have some surprises like Naheem Offord.
They would need a Naheem Offord more if Donovan Starr isn't on the signing.
And I think the Cromaw kid who's committed to Georgia. I mean, I'd be surprised if they flipped a running back from Georgia here this late, but you never know. I think Auburn has done a really good job continuing to recruit him. So
we'll talk more about signing day, which is, man, it's just a day and a half away.
Yeah.
And more. We'll obviously get some basketball in. Love to hear from you. We're right back with hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill and Dan, joined by Brian Matthews, as is normally the case here on a Monday. Drew at the controls. And hour number two of the show brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. Love to hear from you. So much to talk about. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, and that's sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcasts.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, and Jeremy gets us started this hour. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, good evening, guys. Look, you knew it was going to take almost perfect football in that building. The problem is you got every opportunity that you needed, and just an absolute inability to just be willing to capitalize on some of it. And I'm always going to harp on, like, for every decision that our players make, like throwing the ball away on fourth down.
Yes.
You have the reflex of that, you have the mirror of that in your coach, who, when you've got the ball at the 2-yard line, has no idea what he wants to do.
And I thought that just felt like a letdown, not for the just for the fans, but I felt like the team felt like,
sure,
we've got to score, we've got to go for a touchdown, we've got to be aggressive.
Yep.
Instead, you know, you run a hurry up on third down.
No reason for that.
No, Auburn had plenty of time. No, yeah. You run a hurry up, you waste a down, and then you around and take a delay and kick the field.
It is stuff. Yeah. It is constantly things that a Division I football coach should not be struggling with.
I agree.
These are the kinds of decisions that they've got to be automatic, guys. They've got to be.
And Jeremy, when we talk about the need to improve the roster in talent, this is the other part, right? Like the part that when you – like, yes, you need to improve the roster to beat Alabama or Georgia, but you had the talent to beat Cal this year. Cal was Florida State's 1D1 loss, right? Like their 1D1 win.
Yeah.
The one team Florida State beat in the Division I this year was Cal, who came to Jordan-Hare and won.
We have a staff that designed a play for our running back to throw a pass. Fine.
We went an hour without talking about this, Jeremy, somehow.
Listen to me. Every team in the country has that play. And you try to pick your moment when you're going to run it. I don't know that at the Division One level, you tell all five of your offensive linemen to lay down on the field when you're running that play. And then to have that happen and still have your coach in the post game say that Peyton Thorne is the safety valve.
Yeah.
When there's no one over there to block for him because they're all laying on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those
kinds of statements we heard game after game after game. And that's what I was talking about a little while ago. I wonder who's teaching these players what to do if that's what's supposed to be.
Yeah. If that's what you think, how?
Yes, that's
it's exactly right.
It's how?
More important than the what.
No, you're exactly right.
How do you do this?
Yeah, I misspoke when I said what. How? And that's exactly what I was talking about a while ago. It's like it's as though, okay, guys, we have this in our minds. Now you go out and do it.
Go for it, guys. Here you go. And I don't care, like, for all the talk about Nick Saban over the years, and like I said, there was a stat at one point in time, and I think it was like 8 years into his term at Alabama, where every five-star he had recruited had gotten drafted in the first two or three rounds of the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them. That is more than just picking the best players out of high school.
No, you
that
do something
so
with
it. That is so much more than just picking the best players out of high school. That is teaching those guys when they get to college how to play the game of football. And we do not. We do not.
I can't argue with you.
All right, guys. Me too.
All right, Jeremy. Yeah,
I
mean, no kidding.
And I think that, you know, there's still a chance for, like, I don't think the verdict is in on Hugh Freeze. I don't think the book is written. You know, I don't think he closed the book or anything like that. Like, he's got a season, by my estimation. He's got at least one more season to fix these things.
Yes.
I don't think there will be a tremendous amount of patience.
Oh, no. The seat... I don't care what anybody says. The seat will be warm next year. I mean, Auburn has to take a big step forward next year, Brian.
I agree. I wrote about it. Yep. I mean, 7-5 ain't going to cut it. 7-5 would have cut it this year. It ain't cutting it next year.
No, you're right.
This was a failure on the coaching staff's fault. I don't think Hugh Freeze held his staff or his players to a high enough standard on and off the field. That needs to change starting now, right? It needs to change in winter workouts. It needs to change in spring practice, summer workouts, and preseason. That team needs to be tougher. It needs to be better coached. And it needs to, quote-unquote, execute a heck of a lot better next year in whatever situation they're in.
You know, I'm not going to criticize the team nearly as much. I mean, I thought they competed their butts off.
They did.
They competed, but I don't think they were guided right. As Jeremy said, I mean, it's like they have to know exactly what they need to be doing, and that's where you hold them accountable when they don't do it.
Yep.
You don't put somebody back out there if they're not doing it. You go to the next guy and see if they can get it done. I mean, that's what you have to do, and that it did not appear that was the case.
Yeah.
This year.
It didn't to me. The number one problem with Auburn throughout the Malzahn era, most of it, and Harsin, was Auburn did not have as much talent as the best teams in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And Hugh Freeze and his staff are doing a great job addressing that.
Oh, they're definitely upgrading the talent.
But they've got to do the other parts too, and that did not get done this year at all.
3-3. You're right.
You can't lose at home to 4-6-6 teams and call this a successful season in any way, shape, or form.
And it's hard to argue that talent was the reason when you had the talent to beat those teams
not
a year
six
earlier.
Six teams.
Say that again, Brian. I mean, just people, let that sink into your head that Auburn lost at home,
home
to 4-6-6 teams. Auburn was the reason that 4-6-6 teams are eligible for bowl games by allowing them to come into Jordan-Hare and beat them.
And
three of them they beat last year on the road.
And this is a Jordan-Hare despite going through what was then three consecutive losing seasons, sold out. I think they're at 14 or 15 straight games.
Yeah.
Bill, think about how close Auburn came. Again, not to focus on the negatives, but think about how close Auburn came to going 0-4 at home in conference. You had to win that A&M
absolutely.
Game to do it. And if that A&M game.
And then A&M went out and we thought they'd play well against Texas. Boy.
If Auburn loses the A&M game, that's home loss 9-10. Yeah. We're at 9, yes. Right? And we mentioned how long it took Gus Malzahn. Like Gus Malzahn lost his 9th home game 6 seasons in to his Auburn tenure.
Let's say losses are more frequent all across college football now.
Sure.
But 6-7, and that's 7. 4 straight years.
Yeah.
7 losses. 5-7, 6-7, 5-7. You know, yeah, it's 6-5, 6-5 the last 4 years.
This program supports its players, supports its coaches, sells out the stadium. You got everything in place now to be successful. There's no excuses for that type of product on the field.
Nope. All right, back to the phone, and Casey is up next. Hey, Casey.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are y'all doing?
All right.
Hey, Casey.
So this season is like this phrase I'm about to say. You know, this offense and this offensive play calling has been the problem all year long. You don't scheme around your talent. You know, you freeze and the media says, well, I've only done this my whole life. So basically saying, I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care about what you're going to say. This is the only thing I know how to do. This is what I'm going to do. And it's been terrible. It's vanilla without even the bean included. I mean, it's been bad. I'm tired of hearing excuses.
Vanilla extract? You talking like imitation vanilla extract?
No, we get the real thing.
It doesn't have any of that. It doesn't even have imitation. I mean, there's this vanilla without anything, you know, without the bean. It's something, but it ain't vanilla. It ain't even extract. It's just so bland. Maybe it's just water. I don't know. But we don't put our quarterback in successful play calls. A lot of our passing routes are way deep downfield. Mm-hmm. The only tight end we really use other than on the goal line is Fairweather. You know, play calling's awful. You know, there's no excuse for him to be this deep in the season in a press conference saying that he shares the play calling responsibility.
Oh, do you believe that?
Just stop.
No.
Well, and no, but I'd like to ask, does anybody believe that he's going to bring in this hotshot offensive coordinator and just turn the offense over to him?
No.
I don't believe that
no.
either.
You know, he's going to ride or die. He told you already, this is the only thing I know how to do, and that's what I'm going to do. I mean, he's honest, at least to say, you know, the least. But here's the thing, is he should look at himself in the mirror and be like, you know what? My product looks like garbage. And if he had any pride about himself or his family, he'd say, you know, I should want to do a good job. That's what I do. I wake up each and every day. I say, hey, look, I want to try to do the best job I can because it's about who I represent at the end of the day upstairs and the kind of person I want to be viewed as. But I don't feel like, you know, say what you want to. You can be a recruiter, but then you also have to be a coach, like the previous caller. I mean, you've got to scheme. You've got to look at matchups. You've got to be a chess player. Right now, we're not even playing checkers. Like, our play calling is so bad. And it's not a lack of talent. I mean, the defense is the absolute antidote to that argument. That guy on that defense is playing almost all freshmen in the secondary, and they have been balling out.
Yeah, they have played better.
A little tired against Bama.
Well, they played better than I think, or than I felt that they would or they should. They've had problems on third downs. But a lot of that comes down to they don't have a dominant guy on the defensive front, somebody that can take up either two guys or can be in the backfield. Yeah. They don't have that kind of player, and he's having to try to do it with players that are either inexperienced or aren't as talented as the guys they're going up against on the offensive line. So I got no problems. I think DJ Durkin has done a fabulous job this year defensively.
You just hope you can keep him around for as long
absolutely.
As possible.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. My thing is this, and I just want to say that this is the ultimate indictment against Hugh Freeze and his play calling. Just think about it this way. I mean, you got Bo Wallace making a post.
Right.
And each and every day that post is aged, boy, it really seems to lend some credibility to it. I mean, just look at the stats of Peyton Thorne compared against one of the Heisman alleged contenders at the beginning of the year, Milroe, which a lot of programs have talked about. They're better. It's just that Peyton Thorne has not been put in a position on plays to be successful. Now, our offensive line hasn't been great, but you can scheme around that. And it's just like the scheme is so bland and vanilla. Like, there's just really no excuse for it. It's just really, at the end of the day, it feels like fool's gold on offense. You know, you can't claim to be an offensive guru after this year. I mean, ultimately, if he didn't have all that pride, he'd go hire somebody and let them handle it. But I think sometimes in certain types of pride, there's arrogance, and I think that's the issue with this coach. Y'all have a good day, War Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Casey. 334-321-1390. We need to get – yeah, let's get to our first break, and then Milhouse will be up when we come back here on the Monday Drive. Monday evening, Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Drew at the controls, right back to the phones we go, and Milhouse is up next. Hey, Milhouse.
Hey, Milhouse.
Hey, how are y'all today?
All right.
Just a couple questions, or not really questions. One's a question, the other's a comment. I mean, we've all known what Thorne was since he got here, but and I'm a believer that quarterback get too much credit and too much blame.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get some tackles that can pick up a simple twist, it's really not going to matter. If you look back when Tampa Bay beat Kansas City in the Super Bowl, Mahomes was all that, but he's not anything without some protection, and they figured that out, and look at him now. O-line, I think, is, besides quarterback, where we need some help. But my second thing is that it may have been touched on. Oklahoma went into that game against Alabama and said, I'm going to run it.
Yep.
I don't give a flip.
And run it. Right.
And we have the best back in the SEC, and that's just a head-scratcher. If we had run it four times in a row down there, we didn't get it. Tip your hat to Bama. God bless them.
Yeah. If they hadn't done the hurry up on third down, just go ahead and pound it, right. pound it. You know, maybe you could run sometime between the tackles as well. I didn't see Auburn doing a whole lot of maybe it's because of their concern with the tackles getting blown up, but Auburn didn't run wide an awful lot. I don't know. There were just so many things I felt like.
We've just got to do a better job, in my opinion, of what the defense has done, putting our players in a position to have success.
Right.
We're almost putting them in a position where they're, third and one, get under center and run a sneak. Surprise, you just line up under center, third and one, you sneak up there and get under center and run a quick. You see it done. I just don't understand. Fourth and one, third and one. You got to back 7 yards in the backfield. He's got to get 8 to get the first down. It's just mind-boggling. But I'll let y'all discuss that. I just had to get that off my chest. But didn't understand the game plan, not running with Jarquez more than we did.
And Alabama was 12th in the SEC in rush defense.
They were.
And they've been 12th all season.
Everybody who is determined to run the ball has run the ball against them. Oh, here's another thing. Now, again, and this is not a knock. Again, like I said, I love the defense, but I was a little disappointed. Do you realize that was Alabama's best rushing game of the season? Mm-hmm. That's the first time Alabama has rushed for 200 yards all year long.
Yeah, you could tell after what happened to Oklahoma, they made a commitment to to do it.
Made some changes. They used the tight ends. They were able to get the ball out of Jalen's hands pretty quickly most of the time, which Auburn never really did with Peyton Thorne.
You know, speaking of Oklahoma, they hired, I think we mentioned this earlier, they hired Ben Arbuckle.
Yes, they did, from Washington State, offensive coordinator.
Well, if not just from Washington State, though, we've seen Ben Arbuckle. Do you know what I'm about to say, Bill?
No.
We saw Ben Arbuckle when he was offensive coordinator at Western Kentucky in 2022. He was part of that high-powered Western Kentucky.
I did not realize the
offense with Gunnar Britton at tackle and had that quarterback who was, I believe, formerly Northwest Florida State or West Florida. The West Florida quarterback who had moved up from D3 and was that.
Right.
Like, that was the Ben Arbuckle.
I did not realize that's where he had been before Washington State.
He was one of the two air raid guys that Tyson Helton brought into Western Kentucky. By the way, Tyson Helton is doing a really good job at Western Kentucky. He's a name that people are talking about as a possibility to move up to the group, from the group of five to major conference college football. If I were a major conference school looking for an offensive coordinator, I would kick the tires on maybe on Tyson Helton. And if I were looking for a head coach, I would look at the job Tyson Helton has done at Western Kentucky as maybe a candidate. North Carolina, West Virginia, mm-hmm. places like that, I think could do a lot worse than a guy who's brought he's winning with an air raid at a place that's not super easy to win. You know, it was a D2 power, a 1AA power, but you know, I think that's a. Speaking of Ben Arbuckle, you know, who's done a great job at Washington State the last couple of years, but that got started with Tyson Helton giving him a shot in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I'm a big Tyson Helton fan.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that, but Arbuckle going to Oklahoma, you might go, well, so what? Well, a lot of people have been talking about, yes, John Mateer, the Washington State quarterback, very, very close, credits Ben Arbuckle for his big numbers.
Yep.
Oklahoma is definitely making a move, hoping they can get the package deal there with Arbuckle.
Smart.
And Mateer.
Shows me a coaching staff that is being very aggressive.
Proactive, not reactive.
Yeah, but I'd like to see that for Oklahoma, and I'm wondering why the coaching staff here isn't doing that right now.
Back to the phones. John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I was feeling okay about the program that I listened to something just about earlier. It's nice to know that we make some teams bowl eligible. Let me say that. But I think one big thing that just above the program that's just disturbing to me about the game Saturday is that now you have a 5-game losing streak to Alabama and an 8-game losing streak. I don't know what world that's at all acceptable. It's really just I would love to get Brian's take on this, but I saw Auburn on the goal line, and I know Hugh Freeze is disconnected.
Hey, John, we're having a little trouble hearing you. Is there any way? I don't know if your connection's the same it always is, but we tried boosting you all the way up, and it's still a little bit faint.
I'll call you back. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I knew
you were going to make a point to Brian there. I didn't want to.
Want to continue with John's thoughts there.
Yeah, wanted to hear what he had to say to Brian.
Somebody pointed out, and I'm trying to remember since when. It may have been Stat Tiger, but somebody, no, I don't think it was, but somebody pointing out that Auburn is now 12-42 in their last 54 meetings against Alabama, Georgia, and LSU.
That sounds
12-42.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a rough road. I mean, it started under Gus right after, 2013, that great season. There were a few wins in there, but it's been mostly dominant from all three teams. And then LSU's been a little down here and there lately. Auburn got that great win.
Auburn's only win was Bo's win on the road.
Yep, that's Brian Harsin's signature win. So
yeah,
the only one, maybe the only one he'll ever have. I don't know, but
We just saw a little stat on Bo. Bo having an outstanding rookie year. 8 touchdowns, no picks in his last 3 games. Here's something I thought about. The media was right about a few things in the preseason. They picked Auburn. Where'd they pick Auburn?
I don't even remember.
11th, 10th, or 11th.
And Auburn finished tied for 13th.
Yeah.
They got the tiebreaker over Oklahoma. The only two teams finished behind Auburn in the SEC this year were Kentucky and Mississippi State. But
South Carolina was a team consistently at the bottom four.
But who was picked to play in the SEC title game?
Texas and Georgia.
Texas and Georgia. They got that right. That's,
how about that? That doesn't happen very often.
That's very rare for the media.
Now, I don't believe – was Texas picked to win at Media Days, or was Georgia? I thought Georgia was.
I think Georgia was, but, I mean, you've got the two teams that are playing for it.
Curious to see what happens
we all were like, oh, Auburn's not going to finish 10th in the SEC, 10th or 11th in the SEC. No, they finished 13th.
I can remember a lot of things that were said in the past.
No, the problem – the argument we had, Bill, was that in order to rank Auburn any higher than 10th, I think you had to predict something kind of bold about a team that had just – like if you're going to move
Auburn – you look back at it now, how bold, though, would it be to predict that you're going to beat Vandy or you're going to beat one of the other SEC teams? I mean, Auburn should. Auburn – that's the thing. There's a whole lot of difference in going 5-6 or 6-7 when your team – when you know your team is outmatched when they go out there on the field. Like we were saying, I mean – You lose 4 games to other teams that had 5 other wins, and you lost them all 4 at home, and none of those teams are teams that have more talent than your team.
I mean, the argument
at least split those and be 7-5. If you're 7-5, You stepped up from last year.
At media days, we were talking about, like, I mean, I think Kentucky was the team ranked directly behind Auburn. And it's like, you know, you would have.
And they deserve to be. And Oklahoma, what a disappointing year.
And Oklahoma and A&M, I think, were the teams ranked right ahead of Auburn. And it was like, well, do you think Auburn's going to have a better year than A&M or Oklahoma or Tennessee? I mean, there were seven or eight SEC teams in the preseason top 25 this year. And so, I mean, viewed in that framework, 10th doesn't seem so bad when the top 8 are in the top 25, but Auburn, like you said, didn't even get to 10th this year and had the team to do it. You know, had a team to finish as one of the 9 or 10 best teams in the league this year.
Here's another crazy thought. As good a year as it seemed for Texas A&M, they're right back where they always are, 8-4. Yeah. I mean, that's why I got Jimbo fired. 8-4. Mm. They're going to be better than that, and they looked like they really were. And then Auburn beat them, and they lost it too.
Although I don't know how much
the Auburn loss has got to really hurt. That really sucks.
Oh, brutal!
For A&M to have lost to Auburn.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they had their other losses had been. I mean, the Notre Dame game was close, and Notre Dame's going to be a college football playoff team. The South Carolina game, at least, they sort of had the. You know, they could wrap their head around the fact that it wasn't all that close of a game, and South Carolina just pummeled them in Columbia. But no, it's got to be a bitter. I don't know how much better they thought they would be in year one under Elko, right? Like, I don't know if the expectation was, all right, Elko's going to immediately step in and
it certainly looked good mid season. Like, what a great hire, and I still think he is a good hire. But yeah, looking at the SEC standings, Florida's 10th in the SEC this year at 4-4.
And Napier, you know, we talked about, like, I mean, Napier pulling that to within 500 and getting a couple of big wins
and
big wins down the stretch. I think that's I know.
They finished the year winning their last three ball games.
They're on a bit of a roll recruiting, too.
They really are.
Yeah. I mean,
they should be.
That would be, to me, that's, you know, you're talking about what Hugh Freeze would need to do in year three. Like, I think, I know 4-4 and 7-5 overall wouldn't set the world on fire or anything, but you've had enough seasons where you finished below 500 in conference play.
Auburn's schedule next year is more conducive to winning more than seven games than Florida's was this year. Florida had a brutal schedule and still knocking off back-to-back ranked teams and then beating Florida State in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way to wrap things up in year three.
I think Hugh Freeze should have a team that folks can expect to win some conference games next year.
Yeah,
I think
better.
They're
5-11 in his first 2 years.
If he doesn't, I mean, as I said, it's tough to imagine a scenario where you're 3-5 in the SEC in year three, and you haven't had you haven't been 500 in 3 years. You haven't been above 500 in 3 years. Tough to imagine a scenario where a coach gets a fourth year, and not just at Auburn, like anywhere in the league, right? If you're talking about, hey, it's year three, and you're looking at 3-5, and you're looking at what would that be? That'd be 8-16, overall in
three in
3 years. I don't know what kind of program. Maybe Vandy, maybe Kentucky pre Mark Stoops, right? Would give someone that kind of rope, but I just don't think it's happening at Auburn. I think Hugh Freeze will reasonably be expected to improve on this win-loss record in year three. And if he can't do it, it's going to lead to some real difficult discussions.
Oh, there's no question about it. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join us in the final half hour here of the Monday Drive.
NAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday evening, 24 minutes away from 6 o'clock. And let's get back to the phones. And Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. I guess I don't know if it's a positive note, but yeah, anniversary of Punt Bama Punt and the 89 first game in Auburn.
December 2nd. That is right. Yes. 35 years ago.
I was there for the second one.
Yeah, I was
at both of them.
I was alive for the first one.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, I talked to the guys on the show earlier. When was it that we were down at the half-yard line, and I guess we threw a fade to
Cutter
Lambert-Smith.
That was like first or second opportunity down there in the red zone.
I think that was the second drive. I believe.
But it was okay, the first opportunity to score down there, yeah. Right? Yeah, because
I'll have to go back.
I figured Dan would know. He's Mr. Photographic Memory.
I'm thinking the drives run together.
KLS was so open.
Oh, I know. And yeah, he was so overthrown.
And Peyton, there's no question. Same. Peyton said, "Look, he screwed up. Yeah. I mean, he knows he did."
Yeah, it happens.
But I guess my beef is that on the next play, we go to shotgun, we give it to the running back, and he loses like 3 yards. Am I correct on that?
He lost yardage, yeah, on the next play.
Okay, and I guess and the whole time I was like, why aren't you doing the tush push? Because I think Alabama, either before that or later, they put Jalen Milroe under center when they were like at the one or inside the one and just bulldozed in. And we didn't, and I don't even remember.
Auburn's done that. They did it once, I believe, this year. I can only remember one time where they did it, and it was successful.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Uncle T-Bone, and he said he was screaming at the television going, tush push. But we line up in the shotgun, and I think you guys made a reference to it earlier, or somebody did, that, you know, the running back's 7 yards, you know, deep, and you're at the one, but he's got to gain 8 yards before a touchdown.
This was in the second quarter.
Yeah,
it was the second time Auburn got down there. Mm-hmm.
Is this right before the half?
On first down.
No, not the, this is the Mm-mm. one before the
before
half.
That. First down, Thorne throws an incomplete pass to Lambert Smith.
And that's then, the one that would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, then there was a false start, which was another problem.
That's what I said.
Again.
Auburn, oh. I've never seen a team yep. have as many false starts yep. as in Auburn had in the red zone.
Critical situations every time.
Yeah.
Then there was an incomplete pass to the other side.
This is the play. This starts after the Malcolm Simmons play on the sideline. Okay, so Malcolm Simmons gets the penalty. Some folks would say that he was still in bounds. But, you know,
31 yards, yeah.
Yeah, Malcolm Simmons gets
the push. If the guy hadn't pushed once he got out of bounds.
Exactly. I think it's correctly called. Yes. But then this is the sequence that starts after the Simmons mm-hmm. penalty, right? Because I believe the next pass is the Lambert Smith throw.
Should have been a touchdown.
Yep.
Should have been a touchdown. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
and that would have tied the game 7-all. Auburn got a field goal on that
right.
run instead. So after that, they had the penalty, then incomplete pass. And then another incomplete pass. So,
for some reason, I thought Mitch was talking about the series on the goal line at the end of the first half,
which was another terrible.
Where once again
they rushed for no reason. Yeah, there. That was the Auburn's next series.
Okay, so but was there a series where we were like on the half yard line, and we ran a running play and lost like 3 yards?
Well, it was about a yard and a half. That was the Jarquez rush. That was just before half.
Auburn got a first down at the 2, right before half. This is the drive coming off a fumble. It started with a minute 40 left on the Alabama 34-yard line. You think this is a great chance for Auburn to at least make it a 14-10 game?
You're probably talking about first and goal at the 2 with 52 seconds left.
Yeah, first and goal
in the first half.
Mm-hmm. Jarquez ran for a 1-yard loss. Thorne kept it for a gain of 2 yards up the middle.
That got it to the 1.
And then they did that hurry up with no reason. There was about a minute left on the clock.
Yeah, there was plenty of time. It was a little under
a minute. But almost a minute.
But there was plenty of time, and they rushed to the line and snapped, gave it to Jarquez, and he was hitting the backfield.
There was like 4 Alabama dudes in the backfield. Yeah. But he lost a yard, and then another penalty. I think this one may have been on purpose. I'm not sure, to change the angle. And then Auburn hit the field goal to make it 14-6 halftime. Yeah, that was a blown opportunity.
Okay,
missed opportunities, Mitch. Great stuff, Mitch. Appreciate the phone call.
But they did run the ball down there, but that hurried up play on third down was a complete bust.
No kidding. I mean, and then you had situations in the ball game where after the missed field goal, that there wasn't confidence they could make the field goal, and they go for it and try to throw deep
on
fourth and four.
Yep.
It's like, get a first down. I always wonder, and sometimes it works, but why do you need to throw the ball 20, 25 yards when you need 5 yards for a first down? I don't understand.
That's a fun opportunity tonight for Bo to You know, you have to imagine the 2013 championship game just absolutely crushed him, right, as a young Auburn fan, right? And now he's facing Jameis. Like it's Jameis Winston tonight for the Cleveland Browns, right? That's got to be a
I like Bo's chances.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
Who we got next, Drew?
Crawford
is up next.
Crawdad.
What's up, guys? Well, unfortunately, the football season is mercifully over, and we need to move on to basketball. So I want to talk about the game Wednesday.
Oh yeah.
I know you'll talk about this ad nauseum tomorrow and Wednesday, but odds on for the national championship. Guess who's first? Auburn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a little surprised at that, but I mean the way Auburn's played, they ought to be.
No.
Duke.
Auburn is Kansas? +600, and Duke is +650.
Okay. Interesting.
And so that will flip flop one way or the other. So yeah. I'm gonna hang up and listen to your comments.
Well, we talked to Bruce. I just finished up doing it. That's one of the reasons I was late. I was writing a story, and it got a little away from me. But this is Auburn's third trip there. Not surprisingly, they're 0-2.
Right.
They went back in 75, lost by 11. And then back in 81, Charles Barkley's freshman year, they lost by just 1 point, 72-71.
This is Bruce's first trip, first trip ever to Cameron Indoor.
Yeah. It is. One of the greatest places to play.
There can't be that many places in college basketball where I've been and Bruce hasn't, right? But that's one of them. Yeah, that's it. Cameron Indoor is one of them. Been there for work.
They are 946-171 overall at Cameron Indoor. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no kidding.
And they had a really long non-conference home win streak. I think it was snapped fairly recently.
It was long.
Yeah, but they had one that stretched for years and years.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a tough place, but. I think Auburn players are really excited about it. I put up a story a little while ago about Bruce and a player talking about their excitement getting a chance to play in a place like Cameron Indoor.
Great stuff, Crawford.
All right, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if Crawford was still there. Is
John back?
Yeah, we'll get back to the phones. Hopefully, we've got a better connection this time with John. Hey, John.
Hey, can you hear me now, guys?
That's a little better.
Okay, I'll be brief. All I was going to mention was, and I was going to ask Brian about this, I don't think we ever saw how effective Jarquez Hunter could be, because I really wonder if there's any toughness that this coaching staff coaches. It seems like we just call so many pass plays. Particularly on the goal line, why are you in shotgun? Is there not a way to line up in an I formation to just run the ball? It just seems like we haven't seen – Hunter could have been so much more effective if we had committed to running the ball and wearing down.
I think Peyton Thorne would have been much more effective had Auburn committed to a running game.
No, although I always get nervous when a team that's never under center decides to switch to that. So I would think if you're gonna incorporate getting under center in the red zone, you should probably work it in every once in a while.
And commit to the running
game.
And
the way this team executed, there's no way they needed to be doing that.
No, you're right. But they definitely could have committed more to the running game.
I'll tell you what didn't seem to work once all season was direct snapping it to Jarquez in short yardage. Because all it did was tip off the defense that you weren't going to throw the football.
Yeah.
Right, like I think that you know it's I understand.
Oh, but then he did get to throw it once.
Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, I just wish Freeze would commit to some level of physicality. It just seems like finesse. And when you get on the goal line, you need to be able to just press on that defensive front, get the guy in. That's really all I got. Appreciate it, guys.
No, I agree. That they were not physically tough enough on the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. To be honest with you, I mean, that's just the way I saw it compared to many Auburn teams I've seen before.
Well, that's what I go back to what I said at the very outset when you joined us is like both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah.
The physicality at the line of scrimmage, and I don't know that.
That doesn't mean they don't have some players that play real physical.
Plays real physical. I don't know that you could coach these guys to be much better. They've got to improve what they have there on the interior on both sides of the line.
They do. I think that Vontrell did a great job in his first year coaching that defensive line. But to me, it's more on the offensive side of the ball that they just really struggled. They struggled in short yardage when they needed to run the ball, and they struggled any time they were trying to protect the passer.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, third and long was trouble.
Yeah.
Was trouble for Auburn both offensively and defensively,
yep.
And it's because of that front. Oh, speaking of that, not that we've seen him much, but Gage Keys also going to enter the transfer.
We wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah, that one we've seen that one coming for a
while. So who do we have? Is it Holden, Micah, and Gage? Are the sort of official or the players?
And EJ Harris.
EJ Harris.
EJ Harris.
Yeah, offensive lineman.
Who's a homegrown, Auburn High School product, and then there's also
another guard though. Auburn has a lot of guards.
Yeah, and then there was Hank Brown confusion.
Yes,
is that how you describe it over the weekend? There were initial reports
that he was going, that he was planning on.
He hasn't
the
made
portal.
A decision yet.
He says he has not made a decision. That's right. He says he has not entered the portal. I don't think he has said he is definitely returning.
I think it's certainly a possibility.
I do too.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to our final break, Brian, it's Monday.
Yes, it is.
Monday Musings.
Have you read them yet?
Yes, I have.
Oh, shucks. I'd like to see if I can get you on it. What about you?
I have not read your musings yet. What do you got for me?
All right, let's see if you can guess it. We're going back, I think it's 55 years. It's 1969.
Okay, 69.
To a British band stopover for a recording session in Alabama just days before performing at a fateful concert in California. Any idea what
it's
those
the Stones,
are?
Right?
It is the Stones.
It's the Stones. I know. I mean, it's Altamont is the festival.
Wow, you nailed it.
I mean, I've seen Gimme Shelter is the documentary people should watch, which has it. Did you know that on that tour, they play Beard Eves? That is the tour where they play, and I believe it would have been brand new, right? That Memorial Coliseum would have been brand new. The Stones play Beard Eves Coliseum
early
on that
69.
Tour.
Yeah.
But
Bill was not at the Stones tour in 69. But if they'd played, if they you said like if they'd played a year
they'd
or two
play
later,
a year later, I'd have been there.
Yeah, but Bill just missed the Stones at Beard Eves.
But it was fun finding out more about the Altamont concert and all the really bad things that happened there. Sort of ended the summer of love. There was four deaths, including one guy.
Huge festivals look like, wow, this is, we're going to keep doing these. No.
The Hell's Angels had been hired to provide security. I mean, I guess there was like a last second venue change, right? And so the whole thing felt kind of disorganized. There was one band, I forget who it was. Maybe you did in your research, you found somebody.
The Grateful Dead pulled out.
Somebody was either got, they looked at what was happening from their bus and told their driver to keep like, oh, no, just keep going. Just get out of here. Yeah. Like it was like, they wouldn't even, a couple guys in the Grateful Dead wouldn't even get off the bus.
Yeah.
Like just were like, no, there's no way. And I guess seeing some of that anti-hippie brutality that had taken place so far, they decided it wasn't the place for them.
And then it was also fun learning more about Muscle Shoals Sound Studio,
which is incredible artist. There's a documentary on that as well.
Is that called Muscle Shoals, right, or something like that? It's
maybe the something sound up. There's a great documentary on Netflix on the Muscle Shoals. Yeah. Sound.
Yeah. I think it's called Muscle Shoals.
But in particular, Rolling Stones recorded during this trip, they recorded Brown Sugar and Maud Horses and one other song there at the Muscle Shoals studio. And those are two of their best songs. You know, two of the top 10, I would say. Most people would look at it that way. But it was good. And of course, I want to mention that Monday Musings sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce. Delicious salsa, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama, available at Publix. Rimfro's, Piggly Wiggly's. You can get it here in town or Opelika at the Kroger's. Give it a try. You will absolutely love it.
November 14th, the Stones played two shows at Memorial Coliseum, November 14th, 1969.
Wow.
And I believe
I was just one or two at the time. Well, I was one at the time, yeah.
That would have been – okay, so for some of that tour
– You were either or. That's right.
I had to figure out the math there, yeah.
For some of that tour –
I remember when your birthday was.
I was almost two.
Almost.
For some of the dates on that tour, they had Ike and Tina and B.B. King as the openers.
Wow.
In Auburn, it was Chuck Berry.
Yes.
Chuck Berry opening for the Rolling Stones. And they played Auburn about a week. They played Auburn 9 days before they did Ed Sullivan. In November of '69,
and that would have been just a couple of weeks before the Iron Bowl, right?
Should have been Birmingham.
That would have been the 49-26 Auburn.
What? Game. Look at that! Wow, that's impressive.
All right, we'll get to our final break here on the Monday Drive. Stick with us.
The Grammy-winning songs, the Tony-winning movie.